Some of you who have been listening to KPFK over the last several decades will recognize the voice of today's guest. He was host and producer of The Poetry Connection on Pacifica Radio from 1981 to 1996. He is a fabulous word weaver and visual artist, a teacher of art and literature, poetry and philosophy. This is Lois P. Jones, host of Poets Cafe, with poet Austin Strauss.
If all the things known by everyone who has ever known me were spoken like bits of glass onto a wall, that wall would not resemble me. It would be some unearthly creature with animal eyes, long-jawed and strange, perhaps a forest god, perhaps a fish. Yet, if all the things I know about myself, or think I know, were spoken like flashes of steel, like cuts in a face of rock, that rock would not resemble me. It would be someone I once passed on a street, some guy I caught a glimpse of in a speeding car, some familiar stranger with a crooked smile and veiled eyes, someone who refuses to be sneaked up on. That's called Two Portraits.
I love that poem, and I have to tell you that that was one of the poems on my list.
Good.
You see?
I finally got one.
You got it. Well, right. We got a few of those.
I used to give that away as a gift with a little woodcut of a face that resembled me up on top, and then I had it on a long piece of good paper, and I gave that away to people.
I love it because it's really kind of a like a miniature of you. It to me, this was my interpretation. It encapsulated this whole concept of how you can't really put somebody into words because they have so many aspects to them and so many sides, and that it really it's about perception, and our perception changes.
Well, there's a couple of things that actually it's quite a philosophical poem when you start analyzing it. Because in general, as a from a philosophical point of view, I think that the world escapes language altogether anyway. That's called being a nominalist in philosophy. But I'm basically one who thinks language fails miserably in capturing the way things are. I think music comes a little closer in dance. But language is really hard to describe the way especially subjective feelings are, love and fear and all the complexities of just sitting and perceiving wherever you are. Language fails. The best poets and the best prose writers and the great novelists, sometimes great playwrights, do come close at times. But in general, I think people forget that language is a translation of the world, and it's sometimes a very poor translation. The world is not made of words.
That's true, because words are, in fact, symbols, and they just represent things.
That's right.
And we have various, you know, responses to these symbols. And
that's
right. So how you respond is going to be different than how I respond.
That's right.
And I know that you have a degree in philosophy, which you kind of crumpled up and threw in the waste can.
Not really. One of your poems. It's always there.
It's there. Okay, but, you know, you have a poem about that. I don't know if you want to read it or not. It's an interesting poem.
I do somewhere. But I was going to say the other aspect of that poem that I just read, Two Portraits, is a very serious question of how well do we even know ourselves? And there are times when I look in the mirror or when I'm making a piece of artwork and things are happening that I didn't plan. And you almost begin to wonder, who's making this? Where is this coming from? And I'm not into the muses or any of that, but you just start to wonder about what, you know, how is this happening? And it's like you have to let it happen. Stepping aside and without analyzing, it reminds me, I was reading about, I love Henry Fonda, one of my favorite actors, who was also somewhat of a liberal, which is nice. It's funny, I had a great relationship with Jimmy Stewart because Jimmy Stewart was a conservative and they were very close friends and they never talked politics after they had a big fight.
Do not talk politics with your
good friends. But Jane Fonda asked her father more than once how he did it as an actor. Mm-hmm. And he was very much not a method actor. He didn't believe in the method. A lot of famous actors didn't like the method. Olivia didn't like it either. But Fonda could not talk about how he acted. He had no way of articulating. He just did it.
Mm-hmm.
And with
wow, that's
in different arts.
Fabulous, actually.
Yeah, in different arts. And this is not true of all artists. Some artists are very analytical and plan, and certainly some novelists and detective writers, etc., have to plan. And this is something that I try to teach my students, that you have to have the courage to step aside and allow the thing to happen, to just be whatever you're doing, whether you're painting or you're writing poetry or you're dancing. Planning is very important, but improvisation and the courage to just be yourself as an artist and just allow things to flow. Now, certainly when you're writing and you write a lot, then you can just write a whole bunch of stuff and then edit it.
Right.
That, you know, that's where the writing comes in very often. But you have to allow that to happen.
It's a magic. And you know, you talk about the different arts not being able to actually come close to that, the silent world, the ineffable world.
Yeah. Well.
And then music comes close. And I'm thinking about your, you know, the way you express this ability within for the artist to be able to let themselves go, and it really has kind of a jazz sensibility.
Oh, absolutely. And this happens also with my art. I've in the last 8 years or so, especially the last 6 years, I've been doing a lot of what are called artist books, and mm-hmm. I make one-of-a-kind books. They're unique. Each one is different. And the fun in doing them, the real excitement in doing them is I really don't know what's going to happen as I'm working. And the thing starts telling me what it wants. It starts talking to me, not in words. It just visually I start, and I will suddenly pick something to put into a collage, or I'm surrounded with all kinds of things that I might put in. But I never know exactly what it's going to be. And then a page starts working a certain way. Mm-hmm. A painting starts working a certain way. And I'm sure many painters have said this, that the thing, there's a very famous short film with Picasso painting that's one of my favorite little things I've ever seen. Some of you listeners may have seen it, where he's painting, and the painting is the screen, so he's behind it. Mm-hmm. So the painting is changing, and you're watching it, and he does some fantastic stuff, and he keeps changing it. He's never happy with it.
Yeah, well, he was a constantly evolving artist. And, you know, when you talk about his art, I mean, he actually sort of a precursor, because I know you do use some words in your art as well as visual,
oh,
as painting,
much.
Right?
Very much.
And him and Braque, they were pioneers. They used to use words in conjunction with their painting.
True, but I do it in different... I certainly they are influences.
Yeah.
And many others were, especially Schwitters and Toby and people like that. I love them. And Kandinsky. There's a long list.
Kandinsky,
but,
yeah.
But I fragment words and I burn things so that the suggestions of words and sentences and ideas and poems so that I'm trying to get to something more basic, something very primitive,
mm-hmm.
And a little like the gesture of abstract expressionism. I like the groping towards language, the feeling you're trying to say something, or you're trying to say something that can't be said, trying to paint the unsayable, if that makes any sense.
No, it does.
And
it
that's
does.
What I'm after
yeah.
very often. Well, let me, I start talking about my art. I won't read any poems.
Okay.
Let me read you one you've never heard.
Let's try me.
All right. Now,
this
is interesting because tell me what this is about after I finish,
okay.
What you think.
I'm very good at this.
Who's speaking here?
All right.
It's called The Director. An impossible production, much too long. Drones on forever, all the actors egotists, difficult, eager to rewrite their lines, direct themselves, make me superfluous. But I do my damnedest, as usual, to knock these hotshot thespians into shape, turn a hackneyed script into a great one, as if anyone notices. Unappreciated by these ingrates, I work my ubiquitous butt off, and thus the show always goes on as scheduled. All parts gradually connecting, like a complex jigsaw puzzle, my hard labor barely acknowledged. So despite minor glitches and nonstop bitching from my arrogant megalomaniacal troupe, my perpetually dissatisfied cast, who persist in messing up my majestic sets with violent, often gory, needless improvs, the tragicomedy lurches on, its unbroken run assured, though the reviews will remain eternally lousy. Who's talking?
Oh, this is a metaphor that can spread to many different things.
Well, what do you think? What was your first...
My first thought was just the poet trying to express himself and trying to get his words out and having these sort of interactive issues with the words themselves and the as players.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And I that's one of
but
the levels.
But that's not it. Oh.
Well, actually, I was thinking of, even though I'm an atheist, that this is God talking about mankind. And what mankind is doing, you know, how mankind keeps lousing up his perfect work,
right?
His beautiful play, and he has to keep on, one way or another, stepping in and trying to keep them in line so they don't blow the whole damn thing up.
I think he should just close the play down and
start over. I hope not. I really don't want that to happen. I have another poem about that that I wrote a long time ago, but I'm not going to read it, But that poem just says, you know, even though this place, it's a mess and there's all kinds of silliness, I want it to keep being here. I don't want it to go away. I don't want it to get blown up, you know, by bombs or some nonsense, somebody pushing a button and it's all gone. Bad as it is.
Right.
You know.
Bad as it is, may it continue.
Yeah.
And may we continue here on Poets Cafe. I'm Lois P. Jones, and you're listening to Poets Cafe with my special guest in-house, Austin Strauss, a veteran of the radio waves for over a decade here at KPFK with his own poetry show, Poetry Connection. I know you have another poem you want to read.
Well, I'm going to read one you asked for.
Oh, good. Okay.
And my wife, Wanda Coleman, and I have been performing this poem for about a little over a year or so. We started it. It's my poem, but she comes in and plays with it and sings and makes jokes and teases me and stuff. And we've had so much fun performing this. I'm going to read it myself, but I hear her voice behind me. It's about the color red. In pursuit of red, he bled songs. He hummed flowers. Sun ghost on closed lids, and sunburnt smogs, henna-headed rose, and little Ruthie, whose love was red. Red as the inflamed veins of a certain lush's overripe nose, red inks and flags and St. Nick's clothes, red pimples and apples, nipples and peppers and sexy pajamas, red garnet and ruby, robin breast, blackbird wing, red hots, caps, tapes, hens, ribbons, herrings, tomatoes, men. Do all these reds have an essence or attar? Can the heart of redness be discovered? Let red be itself, a rectangular patch hanging perhaps on a white wall, unframed and alone. The museum opens. Visitors rush in through the big double doors, lusting for redness. A raggedy swatch or neatly cut canvas. Red. Red like gush of new blood, panting painted lips, or the anal fin of Betta Splendens, the fighting fish of Thailand. Redder than the necks of 1,000 frustrated racists. Redder than cherry tongues or exploding menstruations. Redder than fire, glowing coal, bloodshot eye, or rooster cockle. Redder than reddest coral or fox, starry giant or dwarf. That is exceedingly red. What will they make of it? A wound in the wall? An attack on museums? A sign of revolt or revulsion? Warning or pestilence or the painter's dyspepsia? Why play so blatantly with nothing nearby, as if other paintings were scared off by a rash? Torn from Titian's smock? De Kooning's snot rag? Van Gogh's gauze? What is the meaning and the cause of red? When red turns yellow, proceed with caution. When red flashes, hold your horses. When red hollers, run like hell. Red is definite, honest, uncompromising, slightly bitter, often poisonous. Red is annoying, loud, insistent, and fidgety. Red is painful and knows all the answers. Red is attractive, but hides sharp teeth. Turn your back on red, and it will stain your mind. When red falls down, everything bleeds.
Love it. Thank you for reading this. This is just a Fabulous poem. I did hear it on YouTube, and I heard Wanda, red, red.
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
She has a beautiful, beautiful voice.
Oh, she sure does. She sings beautifully, too.
Yeah.
That is, it is on YouTube, so you can look it up, folks, those of you who can get YouTube. Do you notice a very funny thing? I wrote this poem long before I got published in a book form, and I actually have Red Hens in the poem, and that's my publisher.
That's right. Red Hen Press.
Red Hen Press is my publisher.
This is from his fabulous book, Drunk with Light, on Red Hen Press, the first collection of poems. And we have both here Drunk with Light and Intensifications, both from Red Hen Press.
Yes, and they're going to do another one next. When is it going to be? 2014, which is coming up very fast. Times, the older you get, the faster the years go by, believe me. And Wanda and I did a book of love poems called The Poetry Project. And we're looking forward to that getting published. I think it's going to cause a sensation.
Well, after 30 years, you guys got
30 plus. We just passed 31 now.
Yeah.
31 years. And I'm having I'm inviting all the listeners, all the KPFK poetry lovers, to my birthday celebration.
Yay, yes.
Along with Louis Campos.
Wow.
We are, Louis is going to be 80. Mm. Wow, and it's hard to believe Louis. He's going to be 80. So much bundle of energy and very funny. And he's originally from the Dominican, Louis. And I am from Brooklyn. And I will be, believe it or not, 73 years old. And I don't feel like it internally.
You don't look like it.
17.
Here I am in the studio, so I can attest to that.
She says, I don't look 73. I look 173. And that's going to be at Beyond Baroque on Saturday, June 16th at 7. And please join us. And you will also get a chance to eat Wanda's fabulous Cajun chicken legs.
Whoa.
And last time we did a thing with Wanda's Cajun chicken legs. That was for a book party of her last book. We drove down from where we live on the high desert, and cars were parting the freeway. It was like the Red Sea. Cars were moving out of the way because they smelled the chicken legs on the freeway.
Don't get in my
Look
way.
Out. Yeah, here come the chicken legs. So, and they went so fast that people were complaining they didn't get any. So, you got to get there in time to eat some chicken legs.
Please come by.
Even if you don't like poetry, if you like chicken, you'll love this. So please, I'd love to meet some of the people who, especially people who used to listen to the Poetry Connection. I have met two or three of the seven who used to listen over the years.
And seven.
Yeah, well, we had a few thousand, actually.
Of course
at one
you
point.
Did.
Yeah, but even the few thousand is a drop in the bucket in L.A., but you were
there's 23 million people in Southern California.
Right. You were the elite few that listened, and I'd love to meet some of you. So please come to the party at Beyond Baroque. You know where Beyond Baroque is, everybody? It's on Venice Boulevard. The exact address is, 681 Venice Boulevard. It's about four blocks past Lincoln going to the west. It's a big old building. It's the old city hall.
Terrific.
Try to get there around 7. Okay.
Oh, right. And I just want to get back to Red for a moment here.
Yeah, sure.
Because this rhythmic, wonderful laying out of a color is so deeply connected with your passion and love of painting and
Absolutely.
Love of color.
Sure.
And, you know, how do you find these relationships between poetry and light? And it seems to kind of converge continually, this kind of a...
Well, I look at, you know, I'm not going to exactly answer your question, but I look at it that I have, all people have multi aspects of their brain, and some people emphasize one aspect and some another. I'm very lucky that I have both the visual and the verbal. The somewhat philosophical, which comes out in the poetry, and the visual, which I hope transcends the words and language. The visual plays with language and words in a different way, with textures, colors, torn, see-through, holes, multi-levels. I was very influenced when I grew up. I grew up in New York, in Brooklyn, and in Manhattan, and I used to see old billboards, and I would tear down a whole lot of old posters and stuff and take them home and make paintings, with the suggestion of time passing and the aging process and the wearing away of language, and leading gradually towards the essence of language, the word primitive has so many negative meanings, but the
idea maybe we can say primal.
Primal or inchoate, mm-hmm. the urge to speak, communicate, write, tell somebody something, even in advertisements and this and that, but that urge that, to me, it's a groping towards saying something that's very hard to say.
Right.
And you know how hard it is just to talk. One of my favorite authors at his best is about that, I think. Henry James, mm-hmm. at his best, in some of his novels and stories, is about people trying to articulate to each other and being unable to really say it. And I think he was the best at that of any writer. He had many faults, but that he was aware of how hard it is for a man, for example, to tell a woman that he loves her. There's one story where he spends all his whole life unable to say it, you know. I think that was The Beast in the Jungle, where he was unable to tell the woman that he loves her. He just couldn't get it out, and nothing ever happens. It remains...
And that's, you know, the way of many... It is very sad. It actually reminds me of a guest that we had recently, you know, the famous Cyrano de Bergerac play. We didn't have Cyrano here, but we had...
That would be a trick.
We had someone from the Deaf West Theater who is a deaf actor who plays Cyrano.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk about somebody who's spent a lifetime trying to articulate his thoughts through the realm of silence. It's really beautiful.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
By the way, that's one of my favorite pieces of acting, José Ferrer as Cyrano.
Uh-huh.
If you've never seen
him. Oh, I love him. I love him as Cyrano.
He won the Academy Award deservedly for it.
Yes.
What a great piece of acting.
Isn't it?
And what a voice. I wish I had a voice like that.
Now, one of your poems, this is Lois P. Jones, who's not a poem, but she's here at Poet's Cafe.
Oh, yes, she is. I'm in the studio with her, and she's a poem.
With my special guest, Austin Strauss.
Okay, Lois asked me to read one of my favorites of mine. It's hard to have favorites of your own because if you have a family with a lot of kids, you'll love them all, right? This is called If I Were a Wall. And I realize that in red, a wall is mentioned, so I must have a thing about walls. But anyway, if I were a wall, there'd be obscenities, political slogans, and initials of dead lovers scrawled in red and yellow, blue, green, and black along my belly. And I'd hold birds of paradise and ravens and sparrows and all the wrens and robins of the universe. And they'd sing and feed and build nests and paint poems down my sides with their if I were a wall. And if I were a wall, I'd hold back the floods and keep out the stampeding cattle, but allow every horse to jump me, and I'd amble slowly among houses and let my stones mumble hymns while the farmers slept, if I were a wall. And if I were a wall, I'd be hard and winding as a frozen river, or soft and deadly as a sleeping cobra, or in my meanderings I'd be a story written in sibilance and curlicues, if I were a wall. And if I were a wall, I'd let myself tumble into fragments, to be dug up and buried in museums, or be carved into faces that are worshipped at midnight by moon-driven witches, if I were a wall. And I'd refuse the weight of corpses, or the smack of noon sun, or gouging by bullets, or wailing of mourners, or anything but warm drizzles and tall grass brushing my thighs, if I were a wall. And I'd dream of entering myself, and becoming a suite of rooms, multiplying and dividing, turning and turning until I was an infinite cavern, all chiaroscuro in texture, where unfettered dreams could wander in search of unsuspecting dreamers, if I were a wall.
Beautiful.
Now, I have no idea where that came from, but somehow it got written in my head.
Oh, well, I'm glad it was written in your head.
In the walls of my brain.
And the chiaroscuro of your universe. I love that word.
Yeah, that's a beautiful word. It's hard to say it, but it's
chiaroscuro. Yes, and it also kind of describes where we are as artists. Oh, we're often in that chiaroscuro, trying to articulate the shadows and the light.
Right, trying to creep out of the shadows into the light.
Yes, and I love many of these lines, but I was moved. Refuse the weight of corpses.
Yeah.
Or the smack of noon sun, or gouging by bullets
This is a leftist wall. It's politically
well,
correct.
That's why you're here on KPFK.
Wants no
is
dead
it the
bodies.
The left wall or the right wall?
No blood of martyrs. None of that. This is a very politically correct wall.
And you've been active politically part of your life, haven't you?
On and off. I was very much an anti-war activist during the 60s, and I was very strongly opposed to the Vietnam War with a group of fellow believers. We had a table on 6th and 8th in Greenwich Village, and mm-hmm. we used to get attacked all the time by right-wingers. I went to court, and big argument about whether we were blocking the sidewalk, etc. That was interesting. A long time ago in Washington, D.C., was sort of attacked by George Lincoln Rockwell, the head of the American Nazi Party, and he got arrested for it.
Oh, the Rockwells.
But then later on,
I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah, it's one of my. Yeah, that's it. I didn't tell the whole story, but I'm trying to keep it short. But
go ahead.
Many other things. But my proudest was a relatively brief stint, a little over a year, as the head of Amnesty International.
Wow,
I was
the
Southwest Regional Coordinator, and I did a lot. I got a lot, started a lot of groups and got a lot done and enjoyed it very much. I actually really wanted to go to London and be a higher figure in it, but that didn't work out. And I have done tons of petitioning and worked for various political organizations doing that. It's a long list.
It's a long list. And I guess poetry is a certain way of keeping a level of sanity about all of that.
Not only that, I've written a lot of political poems.
Right. And do we have one here to serve up fresh in the cafe?
Well, let's see. This is for Dennis Brutus. And those of you who don't know who he was a South African poet who was imprisoned a long time, tried to come to the United States, and it took him 11 years to get in here. Then he became a professor. He was on my show, The Poetry Connection, a long time ago, and he moved me so much I wrote a poem to him for Dennis Brutus. And I mean this. I want you to know this comes from the heart.
Yes.
Wish my poems spewed out of a richer, more dangerous terrain. Wish they were banned someplace. Wish they were feared. Yes, feared. Wish my poems had to be smuggled into the country, be read by flashlight under heavy covers. Wish my poems planted in certain strategic corners would go off like bombs.
Beautiful. Perfect. Thank you. I'm Lois P. Jones, and my guest has been Austin Strauss. Look for our Poets Cafe fan page on Facebook. You've been listening to Poets Cafe on KPFK Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.